Welcome to the All Wheels Rolling podcast. My name is Mark Hamilton and I'll be your host. We are powered by Bourgeois Midland Nissan. They are part of the Bourgeois Auto Group. You can see their new and used inventory online at bourgeoisnissan.com. The Crank and Sprocket at crankandsprocket.ca for your bicycle needs in Orillia. And christinepratt.ca for all your physiotherapy needs, christinepratt.ca. Also, the Simcoe County Mountain Bike Club, scmbc.ca. Hope you enjoy, folks. Hello and welcome to episode 40, folks. We have Joe Fortnum and Keith Richards. You'll remember Joe from episode 33. Joe is a 41-year-old who found fitness and cycling a few years ago to lose weight, get healthy, and have more energy to play with his young son. After joining the Barry Cycling Club, he fell in love with cycling community and developed an addiction for cycling. He enjoys testing his endurance and constantly pushing his limits. Definitely all the coffee butter tart rides. He enjoys participating in organized rides, Grand Fondos, and some other racing events, but probably most enjoys chasing some personal TT goals as well as some team time trials efforts with his friends. Today's episode is about time trialing on road, and we are joined also by Keith Richards. Keith compares himself to an old Volkswagen at 58 years old. These are Keith's words. Joe is relatively new to time trial with a Ferrari inside, but needs to learn how to use the high-performance car versus guys like Keith, who own Volkswagens but can squeeze every last little muscle out of that car to try and keep up with the better cars like Joe. Keith has been racing since his late 20s, so there's about 30 years of racing experience behind him. Keith confesses to not being a natural athlete. He struggles to attain watts and has found a bit of a genetic and age-based limit to his physiology. So his success in time trials has come via specific training for that event ahead of any other consideration, and his attention to marginal gains such as professional aero testing and other stuff most local guys won't do. If you ever want tips on time trialing, Keith is a wealth of knowledge at this discipline and racing in general. If you've never time trialed, I highly recommend it. I'm not an expert at it by any means, but it's a great physical test to see where you're at and be able to push your limits, whether it's a 15K time trial or a 40, as we'll discuss, 30 kilometers for some folks. Sort of depends on what the venue has, but great yardstick for you to test your physical and mental limits. Hope you enjoy, folks. Welcome to the show, Keith Richards, Joe Fortnum. Gentlemen, how's the year been?
Sort of okay. How about you, Joe?
I can't complain, actually. It turned out to be a pretty good year, actually.
How'd your year start out, Keith? You had some significant goals as a time trialer?
Yeah. So I had two kind of crummy years, and Mark, you're a little bit privy to this because you remember my wife was sick 2 years ago, yep. And then last year I broke my hip.
Yeah.
So I had these two horrible years in a row. And so I was literally more motivated this year. Like last winter, I just set a big goal. I wanted to go to Quebec and I wanted a podium at the National Time Trial Championships. And I trained hard and I had a B race lined up in Florida in February, just before the whole COVID mess really kind of broke out hard. And I set a goal of winning my age class at that race, and they would tell me how fit I was. And I won my age class, but I also tied for first place even against the young guys. So I was like, okay, I'm dialed. Like, I'm ready for this race, you know?
Yeah.
And this was in February, and the race was in July, the big race. So came back in March to Florida for training, and then everything broke out, and I literally turned around and had to go home. And it became clear that there was no racing. So kind of, to tell you the truth, like from March until May, I kind of didn't know what to do with myself because I'm very racing and training orientated. I do ride for pleasure, but I like to have a goal and I like to have very structured, because that's my business too. I'm a stock trader and everything's structured, you know?
Yeah.
So as soon as I lost the structure for training for a race, I literally just drifted around. And then, you know, kind of hooked up with Joe for a couple of rides, and we did those long rides together. And it became sort of a good year after rearranging the brain matter away from racing and just go around and ride. And actually, Eric, one of your other guests, Eric BW, yeah. I never can say his last name. Eric, you know, he does a lot of miles when he does rides. And he and I had a chat, and one day we went to lunch, actually, and I was like, Eric, like, the reason I admire you is because you can do these long rides. And I said, all I can do is 20 minutes fast as hell, and I got to stop. And he's like, oh, man, you got to, you know, you do fine on long rides. I'm like, well, I've never really done well, but this year I've done a whole bunch of 100-mile rides, and even on one 220-kilometer ride, which for me was a record, and it was really cool. So, yeah, it started off terrible, very disappointing and depressing, actually. Yeah. I kind of went into a funk, and ended up pretty good, so...
I don't think that's uncommon to. I think there's a lot of racers that I know who went into like a real funk of, you know, you have all these plans and then and you've basically had three seasons in a row now of.
Yeah, for me it was like your extra
just getting fully derailed.
Extra frustrated, yeah.
So. What was it motivating when you got your result down in Florida? Do you feed off that? Are you the kind of guy that, like, totally. That positive result just fuels the fire even more?
Yeah, I'm goal-oriented. Now, yeah. I mean, you don't know who's going to show up at a race. You don't know if you're going to flat or crash or whatever. So you don't know, and you're not going to walk away depressed if you don't win the race or you don't but achieve that goal. But if you're fully prepared and you do your best and you're dialed, and it doesn't matter. So if Chris Froome shows up and cleans your clock, it is what it is, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is that if I'm dialed, I feel good about my effort. And I was dialed, and I did, you know. So, yeah, the year started off like, hey, man, I'm on the right track. I mean, I can go to Quebec, and I don't know who's going to show up and who might beat me and might not beat me. But I know I'm on track. That's all I'm, you know, that's the goal thing. So.
And do you, I know, I think you and I have had this discussion. And I think maybe Dave Viney and I have had this discussion about time trialing. In as much as you are competing against other people, it's also just a great yardstick for yourself.
Yeah.
Of seeing where you're at, even from like, you know, every 2 weeks or a year to year sort of thing.
Yeah.
It's a really good tool, although it's...
Kind of like an FTP test, right?
Yeah.
It is.
It's super painful, but it's super valuable and, you know, it's one of those things I find, I don't know how you guys feel about this, but... If you have a bad day at work, sometimes that effort afterwards, not so good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have to hold
really,
the pain, right?
Yeah, really.
It's all about pain. Like, time trialing is about pain. Pain management. And if you have had if you've been beat up at work, you know, you're depressed, and, you know, especially in my business, I'm a stock trader, and things can go very sideways in my business.
Sure.
Right out of the blue, right? So, you know, I sometimes come out of that very depressed. Sometimes I come out elated. And if you are depressed and your energy has been expended at work, for no matter what you do for a living, you have a bad day, the boss yells at you, you know, and then you got to put out at the time trial. Sometimes the watts just aren't coming.
Aren't you the boss?
I'm the boss, but it doesn't matter. The stock market is my boss.
Oh, I guess,
like, I can complain all I want, but the stock market decides if it's going to give me a raise or not.
Yeah.
So,
thank you. Joe, do you how do you feel about the time trial? This is all cycling is new to you, but Keith would probably be one of the great shepherds we have here to bring you into time trialing.
Totally, and I guess I want to say time trialing is new to me, but it kind of isn't because I mean, ever since I started riding a road bike, I've been time trialing up and down Ridge Road, so maybe for different distance, but the short time trial, the 15-kilometer ones that I'm starting to work on with Keith, and then I'm gonna focus a bit more on. That's new to me, and it's painful.
Yeah.
But,
I've watched you guys, and I think we sort of just found out that's where you guys met, was down at Rad Room, down at the truck store on a Thursday night doing those time trials.
Painful, yeah.
I would do the class before you guys, and then just hang around and watch you guys suffer through it.
I think I'm going to do that next time.
But because Joe's so much faster than me, he would suffer for like a minute and a half less. It was horrible. He'd be in the bathroom getting changed, and I'm still like...
Yeah. It's quite a thing to watch. Like, I mean,
just to watch the look on your guys' face to go through that, because when you're out on Ingram or Ridge, wherever you're doing your time trial, you never get to see the other people.
No.
You're suffering in your own vacuum, but
yeah.
Sort of in that format of suffering in the same room is kind of a unique experience.
Mm-hmm.
I was fortunate enough to be late one time this year, and late as in I didn't have time to get home and get my stuff,
uh-huh.
but I was able to show up right at the start time so I could watch everybody suffer. It was
nice.
Wonderful.
Yeah,
you were there that day too.
Yeah,
that was this year.
Yeah, that's right.
Year, yeah.
Before the whole COVID experience.
Yeah.
I was talking to Oren and Bowser and Jamie Heard about the, I guess there used to be a cycling club, the Huronia Cycling Club, before Barrie Cycling Club.
Yeah.
And that time trial, the route used to start at Johnson's Beach and then go out to, I think this is Channy Bay and back, and then they moved it out a little further and that sort of thing. Were you ever part of the
Was this
then?
The one that was sponsored by the guy in Aurelia?
Not really sure.
Because I did there was one, the very first time trial I ever did in my life was, I'm going back like easily 20 years now.
It was like 15, 16 cycle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was 15, 16. You started way out by, Hawkstone or whatever, and you there was this loop, and I can't remember the line we turned on, but whatever. It was kind of this weird thing because you had to go and then you had to turn left, which is unusual in a time trial, and then cross the bridge to go over the highway and then come back. It was really a strange route, right? But we did it, and I remember doing that. Sorry, no, it was right turns. I'm sorry. I'm going to back up there. It was right-hand turns, but we crossed the bridge. I remember that.
Yeah.
But it was weird. It was okay. I actually found that, I didn't know what I was doing. I had the bike that is now in my basement, and I just slapped a pair of aero bars on it, and I remember they were moving around because I didn't tighten the bolts. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I still actually, funny enough, it appealed to me just because it was just me and my thoughts,
Yeah. That's key.
Yeah.
I know I was out doing the timing for one of the nights for time trial, and as it is, for those who don't know, we always send out the fastest rider last, and the person who's probably, maybe a new person out first, just so that everyone's kind of finishing at the same time. And Dave Viney was the last guy out, and he'd gone out, and it wasn't even a minute, maybe later, he starts coming back, and I thought, what's going on? And he said, nope, I got a flat, I'm done.
Yeah.
And so I went and I talked to him. I said, Dave, there's enough time. We got daylight. If you want to go out again. Nope. I had my mind set up.
Yeah.
I was ready to go.
Yeah.
And that threw me off and I'm done.
Yeah.
And I thought, fair enough. You're a good enough athlete. You know yourself well enough to know that's rattled you and you just, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you've got to be dialed in for.
You do.
You got to know what you're up against.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a big effort. I can see where he's coming from there. Mentally, that'd be tough to come back from.
Yeah, like I said to him, you want to start over again? I'm just a timer. I'm here. I'll be here as long as you want me to be. And he said, nope, that's it.
I got set up on my trainer the other day, and I pulled it out, finally set it up, and turns whiffed on, got ready to get on it. And then I realized that I stole the pedals off my bike for something else. So I'm like, that's it. And I didn't ride.
No, not quite the same.
I lost my focus. I'm like, I'm not ready for this now. So it would have been my first, that was last week, it would have been my first whiff ride. But anyways, I got a chuckle out of that all I had to do was switch the pedals, and I was like, no, too much.
Was the next sound the cracking of a beer?
Oh yeah, it's
wrong.
Yeah, it is. There's a lot of the thing about time trialing versus anything else. Like you can show up to those, Saturday morning rides that I sometimes see you at. We do together here in Barrie, and if you show up late or you didn't bring your whatever, it's okay because you just get going and you catch a rhythm and you're pulling your arm warmers on while you're riding or whatever. It's a different experience when it's going to be a 20-minute, all-out, very painful effort, and your brain has to be fully into it. You cannot be thinking of the argument with the boss or anything. You have to literally, because you're gonna go very deep in it. If you do a time trial properly, your last quarter of it is everything in your brain is telling you, stop pedaling. I can't take it anymore. I'm not going to last. And there's an expression in time trialing, empty the tank in that last kilometer or whatever, mm-hmm. 2 kilometers, some people say, but whatever it is.
Yeah.
And you've already emptied the tank, and then you've got to empty it some more. And it's this depth of suffering that it's insane. So if your brain is in any way not totally committed to that suffer fest, then you're not going to have a good time trial. And that's what Dave did. You know?
Yeah.
And I've experienced it because I had a time trial where my flipping wheel came out. I didn't tighten the bolts. And the wheel went poof. You know, because on a time trial bike, at least mine, it comes out backwards. I don't know. It doesn't lift off like a road bike. So it went backwards as I launched off the start. It went poof, you know. and I was like, you know, and it was the club championships of the year. And I was like, oh, you know, so I got back on and they let me go. I tightened it up. And I was fine after that. But I had lost the brain, you know, the mentality of it. So, yeah, I can understand that.
So, Joe, you've been mainly working on a 15K time trial?
No, I wouldn't say that. No? Because I'm always working on the 40, 46, I think it is, or whatever it is, 43, the Ridge time trial, like the long one out.
Oh, okay, that goes up to 13, is it?
Yeah, just, out to 13 and back, just past the top of Johnson Beach's. The hill right after Johnson's Beach is where it starts.
Yeah.
I mean, I was working on that before I knew I was working on it. Uh-huh. You know what I mean? And but the 15K, yeah, that's new. Starting to work with Keith on that. I think I did it the year before. I did it once, and then now I've done it a bunch more times with him and done it both Eddie Merckx way and trying out a time trial bike now.
That's lethal.
Yeah, we'll see. I gotta learn how to use it properly first.
I always say lethal, not in any disrespect to you. It's just, I don't know. I kind of leaned over a time trial bike once. And I thought, oh, this looks twitchy, and I don't even know. And I just
the first time I rode it, going out of the neighborhood, I thought I was gonna fall off the bike. It felt so weird. I put my arms down. I'm like, how am I supposed to turn? How am I gonna steer?
How do I brake?
And then how do I brake? Yeah. And then when I finally, to be more confident, I sit up and I hold the brakes, this and that, or I hold the other bars, and I'm like, how do I change gears? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I just found it pretty inefficient getting to and from my start line, but so all I've done is go straight back and forth with that. I couldn't imagine riding it in with turns and stuff like that, you know what I mean? At pace.
No, you don't.
Yeah.
Well, triathletes do, right?
Yeah.
They do it all the time. But guys on the track are doing it, and...
But the guys in the track don't have to brake. You know, and then the triathletes actually have a way less aggressive position than us. A lot of people see a time trial bike and think it looks like a triathlon bike.
Yeah,
they're totally different. I mean, your bike was set up as a triathlete bike when you first bought it, right? And you were all up in the air. And it was nice and comfortable. And then you slammed it a bit. And you know, it's a very different setup.
I'm not sure. It was lent to me from my buddy Mike Drinkwater, who's since given me the bike. So now I have
Was he a triathlete?
Mike's done a bit of everything, I think, endurance wise. So he I think he's done time trials with it, but he definitely did do a triathlon.
Because
so
it looked...
he did an Ironman, actually.
Yeah, so it's... Right. I could tell when I looked at it. It's set up as a triathlete bike. Mm-hmm. It's so... They're way more comfortable, that position. So the time trial bike is like, when you're that low, you know, just that much more crunched in, your weight is all over your front wheel. It feels horrible.
Yeah.
That's kind of the point. You're fast.
Yeah. I need to get dialed in on it, I think. I've only seen about maybe a half a kilometer speed advantage in that 15K time trial.
Okay.
That's nice.
And that's... And my power between the two was within like 10, 15 watts, so pretty close.
Yeah.
I find I can't hold the wattage on the time trial bike after that 15K. Forget about it. Like it gets a lot harder. It killed me one time trying. I did the 40K time trial bridge, I could hardly walk when I got off the bike.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Someone has told me, and I don't. You guys are the bike guys, not me. But the seat is just a little bit
more
forward, so it's more...
You ride on the tip.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's a different muscle group.
Well, it's a different area to crush. We'll just leave it at that, you know? Like, you're not riding a tantra bike because they're comfortable.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I've watched a couple people I'm a Merckx guy because that's all I have. But at the corner, like when you're making the turn at Ingram to come back, you see people who are in aero, and yeah, it looks really sketchy and not super smooth. That's
yeah. Well, at the turnaround, you have to come back up on your horns,
yeah,
and make the turn. You have to brake, turn, then get back in your bars after the completing the corner. You can never corner on bars.
Yeah.
So you just don't.
Yeah. And so the one race that you were going to be doing, Keith, what distance was that one? The one in Quebec?
Joe, I think it was like 25, wasn't it?
No, 30, like, it's like 39, I think.
Oh, so it was like a 40K.
Yeah, yeah.
That's, yes, so that's the biggest length they have in official time trial is 40K. Okay. So there's like 15, in Britain they do 16 because that's 10,
right.
10 miles. So 15, 25, and then 40. So the 25 is kind of the UCI standard, and then 40 would be the, they actually call them 40K time trials. Like it's,
yeah,
it's the one that you're, you know, you worship people that win the 40, you know, so. Yeah.
I went down for, I have a bit of fondness for the time trial just because it's a good suffer. And I don't know why, I must have had a break in my mountain biking schedule or whatever, but I think 2 years ago, I signed up for the Provincial Time Trial Championships down in, oh, I don't know, it was Grand River or something like that.
Orangeville or out that way anyways.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the file.
Yeah, so I didn't really look at it because I just thought, well, it'll be 15K time trial.
Yeah.
No, it was 30K.
Oh, it was, yeah. Wow.
So
that's a big difference if you're not ready for it.
Yeah. Your pace has to be different.
I said to someone, I'm like, oh, at least double the suffering. They're like, no, your math is wrong. That's four times the suffering.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yes.
I don't know. I beg to differ. And maybe it's just because my experience, like my lack of experience in the 15K, like to me, that really hurts.
Well, so
I've been running that 40K up and down ridge forever. I would take that any day over doing a
15.
Yeah. Maybe I'm not doing one of them properly, or both of them properly. You
no,
know
it's
mean?
True because
so,
you're riding the edge of your lactic threshold, your functional
yeah,
threshold.
Yeah, and you
right?
can't do that in a 40K time trial
because it's
an hour,
over.
Right? So that's where I think it's more comfortable, almost like it's a high tempo or sub threshold effort, which to
it.
Me is sounds a lot nicer.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess my question to you guys is: I'm a very visual person, and I. Mountain biking or whatever, I really like to know the route that I'm on. I take visual cues of, okay, I know I got 1 kilometer from here, or like this is my dump everything I have sort of moment. When I hit this driveway, I know I gotta be full gas, whatever. I found when I went down for that one day race, I didn't have those cues. Oh. So as I was going out, I was trying to be like, okay, I need to know here is like absolute dump everything you have. And
yeah,
it was tough. Do you guys go off visual cues like that in your race, or are you purely looking at the Garmin? And
well, your Garmin is one of your visual cues.
Yeah.
So
but like, is that the
is
you just
it's my only visual?
Yeah.
Cue.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the 15K time trial, I mean, I can count on my hands the amount of times I've done it. Right. So I haven't done it enough to. Probably pick
yeah, you learn the
cue. There's
like
probably
the,
there's
right
probably a couple
corner,
rises.
You know,
there's a little couple rises at the end that you might want to wait and pound up those. Or I know ridge pretty well. Like
yeah,
I know when to hit it and when not to hit it there. And,
yeah. Yeah, like you said, there's those little subtle things. Like when you're coming back, just at 3, there's a little bit of a grade up, and then you know once you get past that, there's a nice big downhill when you come back towards the second. And
yeah.
Kind of get to know those things.
But when you're doing one, say when we go to, like, I think, Joe, you're planning on doing the Quebec one as well this year, right? We were talking about it, maybe training for it a little bit together.
190 meters climbing or something?
Yeah, it's
like 40K is perfect.
So it's
not like there's a 100 meter hill or anything.
Yeah,
it's just
flat. Well, it's supposed to be. That's what a proper time trial is. So actually, I did you talk about
how there is turns in it, though.
But that's okay, so long as they're not U-turns. Well, like U-turns, you just come up in your bullhorns, right?
Yeah.
But so, like, I did the worst time trial I ever did was actually 2 years ago. There was the Gray County time trial. And actually, I came third in my age class, but I would have done way better. I think I could have actually moved up to second or something.
Right.
But the reason I didn't do well is because we had to climb the flipping, you know.
Oh, Collingwood time trial. Yeah. You got to be climbing.
It was insanity. Well, yeah. I did the Collingwood one, and I could sort of mentally deal with that one because you didn't even bring your time trial bike to that. I just brought my climbing bike.
Oh.
I didn't even bring my time trial bike to the Collingwood one. It was just like, yeah. Anyway, but the Gray County one, we had to climb the escarpment. You know, it was like, I can't remember what the road was, but anyways, it was sort of like climbing the gray 15 or whatever, the
19. Yeah.
It was like that. It was like this climbing the escarpment. I mean, it was like, what am I doing on this big heavy bike with a disc wheel trying to, and then the problem was you turn right and then you ended up having to come back down the escarpment on this horrifying, like, I do not want to be on my aero bars
no brakes going 80,
and 90. And you know how aero you get on these things? Like, you can go 100 kilometers an hour going down, you know, if you go 70 on a road bike, you're going to go 100 on this bike, right?
Wow. Sure.
You got no brakes, and you got tiny little tires, and 90% of your weight is over that front wheel, and all you have to do is hit a pebble the wrong way. So what I did was I did the opposite of the, I know the guy that was ahead of Kim Sackett, he was right ahead of me, and he's like, whoa, down, you know, and I'm like, ooh. So I was up on my horns, like trying to make as much wind hit my chest as possible, which is the opposite of what you want in a time trial, because it wasn't worth dying just to win the Gray County time trial. So that kind of stuff, was there visual clues? No, it was like, I mean, I used the Garmin, and I said, okay, it's a 30K time trial, and I'm 20K into it, so that, you know, whatever, I can sort of pace myself off of that. But you can't, on some of these courses, like, if they're not well designed, I mean, it's just, you just got to go with the flow and decide on the fly what you're going to do. I pre-rode that, and I still wasn't prepared for that downhill.
Oh, I bet.
Because in full race mode, you want to win, and so it's just like...
It's even shocking to me that they would, up there, they would even do that. Because if you got anywhere near the top of the hill, the wind up there.
Oh, it was nuts.
Yeah, you had a disc wheel on.
Yeah, disc wheel in that wind.
Everybody complained about it that year.
For sure.
Yeah, so.
There's lots of roads that are down at the bottom would be way better that you could do that on.
Yeah. John Maloney won it, by the way.
Oh, did he?
Yeah, go figure. But,
wow, that was years ago.
That was like 2 years ago.
Nobody would touch him now.
Oh, he's even faster. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, all you can, you know, you just take your visual clues if you know the course, and if you don't, you just use your Garmin.
Yeah.
That's all you do.
And I hate to keep bringing it up, but Dave Viney said to me one time, he said, you change your gears. He'd shown up for the time trial, and I brought my bike. I was going to be the timer, and then I was just going to ride it afterwards because there was lots of daylight. It was midsummer. And he was the only one who showed up, and he said, don't bother. He said, I can do this on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, I'll just ride with you. So he just stayed behind me. And he was just kind of giving me some super helpful little things. And it was awesome. But he's like, you change your gears so much. And he's like, your cadence, what are you doing with this?
Because
I think kind of like,
I think I'd be nervous if Dave was behind me. Yeah.
I
had no clue what I was like. I just was going for a ride. And So in those punchy little... I don't know, whatever you want to call them, little rollers that are on Ingram, do you change your gear? Like, would you ever change your gear just for some of the
one gear?
One gear, yeah.
You can either stand it in the same gear, because they're so easy, those hills, or you go down a gear just to stay on the bars, and that's all I do.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, but I think Dave was probably pointing out, by the way, you know, I trained with Dave for the past 20 years, right? So, I mean, he's the guy that helped, you know, helped me understand the art.
Yeah,
Dave is referring to randomly changing gears. Like, you basically, the course is so flat, you should be in the same gear except for maybe one or two of those small rises. Maybe you drop it by one. That's what he's talking about.
Yeah,
I don't know. I'm changing all the time. Like, I want my cadence to stay exactly where it is. I thought that was the right thing to do.
Me too.
And for for energy wise. So I hit 90 or whatever it is, 90, 95. I try to stay in that zone. As soon as it drops below 90, switch a gear.
No.
As soon as it goes too high, switch a gear. That's what I'm doing the whole time. So I guess, am I doing it wrong?
is there the right answer? What's the right answer?
Dave's answer, I guess. I mean, he's a time trial champion, so I definitely go by
What sort of, just, I know this is kind of off of the topic, but what kind of cadence do you try and keep? Like, what sort of window do you...
Like Joe said, 90-ish, you know, give or take. I mean, some guys try to keep this super high cadence. In fact, sometimes I drift down to 85 very comfortably, you know. Now, Dave was the ultimate, you know, you ever seen Dave? Like, he would do 80 RPM, like, all the time, everywhere he went. He was really low cadence. You know, for a skinny guy like him, he's super strong, you know, super high power output.
I'm shocked you say 80. I feel like it was, like, 70.
Maybe even 70.
Hey, yeah. So, what's Lionel Sanders? What was his cadence? It's, like, 70-something.
Yeah, he was very low.
That he runs? And he had to run it higher for the that hour record there because the gearing on the bike and you don't get...
Yeah, he was hoping... I didn't... see what the final stats were, but I think he was hoping for 87.
Yeah, maybe. but that's high for him, right? Like, he's in the 70s. That's wild.
There was an aero study done. There's a podcast I sometimes listen to, and it said that a lower cadence is slightly more aerodynamic because you're churning the air less, for what it's worth, you know.
Yeah.
But there's arguments on the side. But maybe you're burning your legs out more with the lower cadence, too. So who's to say?
Maybe it's the way you're training, too, though, right? Like, if you're training that way all the time.
You feel good doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I was following a training plan that was called for 90, 95 cadence, and I got really comfortable at that cadence. I love it. I mean, I feel like I can do it forever. Mm-hmm. Heart rate doesn't go up, and so that's why.
Yeah.
That's why I shoot for that one.
Whatever works.
Yeah, I feel mine over the last couple of years has kind of drifted around a bit. I used to be like a 95 to 105 kind of guy.
Wow.
That's and now I feel like I feel like I can comfortably get down like down into the 70s. But I don't think I have a favorite anymore. Like,
no.
I think I've kind of broken my mind that just whatever suits the situation is sort of where I seem to wind up.
Yeah.
Today I couldn't believe it. So low cadence, I figured it's going to hurt. Like, it's going to be a lot harder and you're going to tire out more, this and that. But after listening to your podcast with Oren and Jamie there the other day, Oren was talking about his comments to Avery about when he was cramping up and what to do.
Yeah.
And so I listened to that. I started cramping up in my ride today about halfway through. And I was spinning 90 cadence pretty much. And anyway, so I dropped it right down to like high 60s, low 70s. And it made the cramp kind of fade away. I tried to ramp it back up, didn't work. So I went back down the last 46 kilometers or whatever. I did at like a 70 cadence. And it was crazy. I thought it would burn my legs out and it didn't. I got used to it, got comfortable, and it was okay.
And, you know, I'll go with what other people said. I think what earns, what do you say? You iron out your...
Iron out the cramp,
yeah, whatever it is with
the low cadence. It was funny, man. It was
hard to argue.
It was it felt like it worked. Like it totally did. As soon as I ramped up the cadence again, and the cramping started up again, and I was hoping I could just iron it out and go back to normal, but I couldn't. I had to keep ironing that for the rest of the rest of the ride. But
I think it's one of those things. It's good to not everyone has it, but I've been with a couple people who've had DI2 and it stopped. Like, they didn't charge it enough, so it's just stopped working partway through the ride. So their cadence is going to be whatever their cadence is.
Yeah.
Whatever gear they're left in, so not bad practice.
Especially if you're riding with people.
turns into a fixie.
Yeah.
That's happened to me a few times.
Yeah. Do you guys have a favorite coffee stop you like on your rides around?
Yeah, Mark's Brothers in Aurelia.
Yeah,
it's pretty awesome. It's like this. I guess it used to be a convenience store, and then the kids took it over, or the son took it over, and turned it into a coffee shop. And it's really neat because it's right in the middle of this residential area.
Yeah, it
There's
is.
Nothing else around it, and I think it's pretty cool. They got a nice menu there, and
nice place. I've been there a couple times.
It's quiet. You're off the main strip, you know. That's what I really like about it. So
yeah,
that was good. M's is good too. You know, sometimes like back when I was training with Dave, we're talking about Dave running. When I was training with Dave, we did this. When I was trying to train for this, you know, one of the longer races. I think it was the Great County Road Race or something. I never do well in those races, by the way. I just get I provide money so that somebody else can.
I heard they went up Scenic Cage three times.
Yeah, yeah. Not my style. It's like, if it's not over in 20 minutes, why am I here?
Yeah.
But whatever the case, we would go and do this, what we called the Coldwater climbing loop, and I actually have it as a route. I can always send it to somebody. Dave calculated the most possible vertical footage you could ride.
You don't got to bother sending that to me.
Well, if you want to train. So we were, we spent a couple of years. I did this, in trying to go into these, more hilly road races. And we would always go to M's in Coldwater. Nice. And they're very pro cycling there.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So they'll give you a discount if you're wearing Lycra sort of thing,
Yeah, yeah.
Just great people. So I like them. Good coffee.
M's, I've been striking out this year. I struck out three times. Gas station butter tarts three times this year.
Oh,
I was just out there too early.
Oh, okay.
I guess they don't open until 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
I'm in it with Adam DiBiasio, and I should know better. But I asked him, he said, oh, we'll ride up to M's and we'll turn around. I said, you sure they're open today? Oh, yeah, yeah, I'm sure they'll be open.
Yeah, so you had the gas station bar chart too?
No.
Yeah.
So it's yet on my list. It's on my list.
I've only been there once, but I've attempted to go there, I don't know, this year three times. But
the summer,
same thing,
always...
same thing last year, a couple rides, and... It's tough when when we're used to riding at 6 o'clock in the morning when the weather's nice. Sometimes you got to ride that early because it's cooler, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then it's hard. You're going to be out and back before they open.
Yeah,
that makes
yeah.
sense.
So let's talk about the nasty thing. Weather starting to change. Are you guys still on Ingram smashing it out?
No. I think we had our last workout about a month ago.
Yeah.
So, I just both. We both use trainer road, and so I just dialed mine in. Although then I ended up taking another few days of. I've not been very, like I said, I sent you an email. I'm dialed in. I've programmed it in. Then I did two of the workouts. I did one of the interval workouts early this week, and I was like, oh man, it was an over under workout. You know, you go over under your threshold. And I was like, this hurts so bad. I only did two of the three reps. There were 3 12 minute reps of over under FTP stuff.
Yeah.
I was like, I was dying after two. And I was like, as I said, you followed Matt Straub. I've been doing intervals since I was 3 years old, just out of diapers. And now I've taken a year off of doing intervals, and now I can't take the pain. It's horrible. So it's going to be a while to, get back into it. But it's trainer for me. And you're not riding outdoors either.
I did ride Friday, Saturday outdoors. It was
nice. Yeah.
Wow, it was nice Friday. I wore my summer kit. Could have.
I saw.
Should have probably worn sunscreen. And then on Saturday, I wore every single piece of winter kit I think I own.
Oh,
what a difference. It was crazy. But anyways, the sun was out. It's funny because we said we were just going to go to Carthew Bay, but then we got there and it was nice, so we kept going and we did a bit longer ride. So it turned out to be a really nice day. But no trainer road. So I got a link from a buddy for the first month free or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm already, I'm game to set it up. And then the first thing it says is do an FTP test. And I'm like, shit.
Yeah, you gotta do it.
So I haven't started yet because of that reason. My free month has started, unfortunately. Well,
so time's ticking.
I wasted about a week because I didn't want to do the FTP test.
FTP test is not as hard as the actual interval stuff they make you do.
No, I think it's maybe I'm just not ready to see where my FTP is at now.
Yeah.
I think it's,
I took
almost a month off. So
you
got to start somewhere.
Let's talk about that because we are headed into winter. And Keith and I kind of talked a little bit. Joe, you and I have talked a little bit about this. Is taking time off detrimental to you? Is it the end of the world?
Not at all.
You mean a couple weeks off? Yeah.
It's not, no. Like, not at all. I think it's... I
think I know why, but could you explain why?
I needed it. I started in January last year pretty hard. I followed a program, and I was hoping to do some racing. Can't say I was disappointed when it was canceled because I don't think I was quite ready yet this year. But I was training for that from January 1 on steady. 6 days a week, 12 to 15 hours to start, and then it got heavier. And so anyways, I'm kind of burnt out by by now, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So I took a break, kind of. I started slowing down in August, and then maybe part of September and half of September and half of October was, I still rode maybe once or twice a week a couple of the times, but they were more social rides that I didn't want to say no to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I took that time because I needed it, and I figured there's no way that I'm going to be able to get on that train unless I take a break.
Yeah.
So my idea this year was to take the break before, because I was pretty burnt out. But now I'm ready to. Now it's trainer season. I finally got going on the trainer, and I'm ready to focus hard on it till Christmas time at least. Anyways,
Keith, you fairly the same little break? Are you normally? You don't normally take a break at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a weird guy in some ways. Like it's, so I really...
You got nice weather all year round.
Well, I should, but I can't get down to Florida.
No, yeah, I know.
Just don't talk about it.
Might need to take a break this year. Yeah.
I mean, for everybody, I don't know, on the podcast, I mean, I go to all this trouble. I build a house in Florida just so I could live down there for the summer so I can train all year round. That's living the dream. Because my business, I've got employees here, and I can just pipe into my office remotely like technology allows you to these days. My wife actually built me an office in my new house in Florida. So I'm ready to go. And then the world collapsed, you know, but whatever the case. Normally I'm very structured in my life. So I like to train all year round. I'm weird. Like I just got to have all this structure going on. This year, the past couple of weeks, I've kind of noodled around a bit. You know, my wife and I, we bought gravel bikes, and we've been kind of noodling up and down Simcoe Rail Trail at her pace, which is, you know, like 110 watts for me or whatever, right? You know, so it's great. I mean, it's been it's fun because, you know, we talk and whatever, and my wife's gotten into it, so she's, you know, really proud. She's doing 50 kilometers on a bike, which is pretty good on a gravel bike, I must say. So, you know, it's been helping us, and now I'm like you, Joe. I'm starting to get that hunger right now. I'm starting to feel like, okay, all right, enough fooling around.
It worked for me. My thinking on it, and I'm game to go now. I'm ready to go right till Christmas and go hard, and maybe take 2 or 3 weeks, rest or fun at Christmas time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then hit it hard in January. Pretend there's going to be some events in the spring.
I think they will
train accordingly.
There's going to be time trials because they've already in Newmarket. They've been running time trials literally since August. No problem. It's fully UCI legal to do time trials now, so we can 100% count on some form of time trials next year.
That's awesome.
Okay, so that's why I'm motivated now, because now reason.
You're talking me into this. I'll start training for this. That's what's going to be.
There's going to be time trials. I mean, everything else, who knows about road racing, this and that, but time trials, without a doubt, there will be time trials next year.
And time trials are kind of the COVID-friendly option.
They are.
That's what they were doing for mountain biking up at Mountain View. They had that's the only place I think that had mountain bike racing, and they were doing a time trial format.
Yeah.
Hardwood's running a cross series. Well, it's maybe wrapped up now.
Everybody's going to have to adapt to
time trial.
Adapt to what's happening. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, they did it with Newmarket. I actually showed up for their version of it on our course. And I haven't done anything. I think I did one or two workouts with you. Then I showed up at this thing. I've been drinking beer all summer and noodling around at 30 kilometers an hour all summer. Like, I've not done any real training. And so this doing a time trial was kind of silly for me. But I just went, what the heck, right? And that was like a minute slower than my normal time, forgot my best time. But that be that as it may, what they did was they started it with the fastest guy first rather than the fastest guy last. Okay. And that was the difference. So the old days, you knew Ed Veal and Maloney and Viney were behind you, and the sooner or later they're going to go by you. And it's half a minute between each guy, and you know you're just waiting for Maloney to go screaming by you or Dave to go screaming by you. This way, those guys go first.
Right.
And so they had their fastest guys go first, and, you know, they still stuck me like third from the people that I wasn't in shape. It's like the memory of what Keith used to be. You know, the point is that it worked very well because nobody caught each other.
Sure.
Because even that said, the person behind me still didn't catch me.
Right.
You know, so it worked out really well.
Yeah.
You know, so it was great.
It's an oddball thing. But I do it, so maybe I'll ask you if you have ever done this. Do you ever look over your shoulder to see if someone's catching you?
No, just at the turnaround. You can see anyways.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I don't know. Sometimes when I'm on my way back,
yeah,
if I hear the, you know, the disc wheel coming, I'll sometimes
don't
turn
look.
Just to see who it is.
I totally do it. When I'm training with Keith, if I'm in front of him, I'm looking to see where he is.
Yeah. Well, and
if I gapped him, is he getting closer or is he right there?
Well, we have this rule, he and I, that, you know, if we're training, like, it's got to be real training. So if I start sucking his wheel and get into his draft, then I'm not really training anymore. So, and you're not allowed to do that in a time trial anyway. So if I drift back from Joe, then I'm still staying out. And so Joe can take a look, but you really
can't. I can see him pretty easily, but like I'm not looking to see if he's drafting. I'm just looking to see if I can let up or not, which is totally against the point. We're not supposed to be training that way, you know what I mean? Even though, but we're still competing. We're always competing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Every workout's a race.
So we'll have to work on that next year so we're not.
Well, you probably, you know, it's good. I think you should keep doing that because when you turn your head, we probably lose 1 second.
Oh, yeah.
So you probably gain a second, I should say. So I encourage you to turn your head a lot when you're Actually, I was just going to mention, it's interesting because the great thing about time trialing is that, you know, Joe is, I was mentioning this before you came over, but Joe, you're a natural athlete, okay? You are. You're a beast, man. Right. Like, everybody in this whole club knows
it. Not every sport, that's for sure.
Well, no, but in this sport, you've got talent. Now, you'll probably never beat, you know, Trevor O'Donnell up the Blue Mountain, you know.
Oh, that's for sure.
Scenic Coast, you know, like so that he's just too big.
St.
Right?
Vincent Hill, I don't know, anyway.
Yeah, you can barely even get up the time for the time trial hills, right? What I'm saying is I think you're a guy with a lot of inherent built-in natural talent, but you're now learning the subtleties of time trialing. And what I love about time trialing is that, you know, you can, in most disciplines, it's just get faster, make yourself stronger. In time trialing, it's all about, like, your position, your everything from your equipment, you know, whether this pair of overshoes is faster than that pair of overshoes, and your skin suit, is it does it have a wrinkle in it? I mean, your helmet choice matters a lot, right? So all these little factors give you a half a watt here and half a watt there, but you do 20 of those, and before you know it, you got 10 watts.
I mean, and I'm starting to realize it. So I this year I paid attention to the time trials in the Giro mainly. They had 3 of them or whatever, so I really paid attention to that. But also, Lionel Sanders there, his hour record.
All those things.
The preparation for it and everything. And, you know, he was showing one of the examples he did. I think he did 12 laps, maybe 4K with his head down and his head up, like in the triathlon position and then in the time trial position.
Yeah.
And it was a difference of like 4 seconds. Doesn't seem like a lot, but 4 seconds over 40K. That was only over 4K, right? So that's like 40
times
seconds.
10. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I've learned about aero helmets too, that apparently they save like 40 seconds over.
Huge.
Over a 40 kilometer time trial. So you start adding all those up, I could see how
in position,
so how they work.
So you and I are going to hit I've done aero testing before, and so I was gonna, you know, here I am, I'm gonna help a guy get way faster than me, which is just, you know, like I should be like teaching him all the things to do wrong, right? It's like,
I don't know, I picture me going to aero testing and they just tell me to give up. You can't make new aero.
It's like trying to make a brick arrow, right?
Yeah.
But
I don't think they make skin suits big enough, and like, I don't know what I'm gonna do.
Anyways, it's all these things. I honestly believe that Joe has you have the capability of being a great time trialer, because even though you're not a skinny guy like a Dave Viney sort of thing, he was like a pencil wailing through the air. But you know, it's about power and holding position, and you can make up for that. And you're like, I'm 100% convinced you're going to be a very fast time trialer.
Thanks,
you got the
at least
engine.
One of us is convinced.
I've seen Joe's suffer level.
He knows how to
that. Holding position, I think, is another kind of suffer all on its own.
Oh, it's terrible.
Yeah.
I think that makes you suffer twice as much, because I mean, you're not shaking anything off. You know what I mean? You can't.
Yeah,
that's tough.
Can't stand up.
And you actually keep going back to this hour record or whatever, and you see Ed Veal's comments, or they look at his form, this and that. Ed's like, well, I don't think it's great form, you know. And he was all over the place. Yeah. Could you imagine that guy doesn't move out of his position? What he could do?
Yeah.
That's it seemed sure. like, do you know how long? Like, it didn't look like he had a whole bunch of prep going into that, like, of track time. Like, I'm sure he was training for it.
I don't know, like, maybe a couple of months at most. I don't even know if he had that.
That velo was closed. I think he maybe only had a couple of weeks.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, just, yeah. like, actual time on that track.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
plus, he ran his, like, I think he ran his personal best 5K the week before, so he had other stuff going on, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It wasn't, yeah. Wasn't just that.
I mean, yeah, what was he running? He had a 61.13, I think, was the gears he had. Like, 61.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seems massive. It looked massive.
It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I counted mine the other day. It was 54 on the front, so it's nowhere close to
that. Oh, you got it. Yeah, you, because you're so strong, you should get a 56 at least.
I don't know. I'm not running out of gears on Ingram, though. I mean, until I'm running out of gears, I don't know.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, if there was a downhill or something, but there's no, you know, on a flat course, I think that's fine for me right now.
Yeah. I think Lionel took it to another level with his arrow. He shaved off his mustache.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, totally.
Sort of thing. You know you're serious.
Yeah. Do you see, Keith, obviously you've been doing this a while, you've seen a difference in, like, bike composition, wheel composition, helmets, kit. What's sort of been the one you think has been the biggest game changer?
So, like, I'm a, you know, whenever I get into something, I go deep. So this is, and time trialing is the single most, if I can say the word, anal thing you can do in the world of cycling. So, like I said, you start comparing data on skin suits. You start looking at, you know, your shoe covers and which ones are faster, you know, and there's data on this stuff, right? Yeah. That you can look up if you're, I'm way down the rabbit hole. Yeah, I love this stuff. It comes because, like I said, I'm a stock trader, so I look at all this data all the time, right?
I think cyclists in general, Joe's a student of the game.
He studies
numbers. Oh. You study numbers. I know lots of guys that love to go down that rabbit hole into the analytics.
It took me years to get to where your knowledge is already. Like, I figured stuff out in a couple of years.
I can read stuff for hours. Like, I love looking at stuff. It makes me appreciate every ride for different reasons. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can always find a positive in there, but I can also find negatives in there too.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks. I had my best run up ridge this year on my road bike, Eddie Merckxstyle.
Yeah.
And my fastest time ever, but I was pissed off because I looked at my power on it. My power was down about 20 watts when I thought it should have been. And so here I set a PB and I'm pissed off.
You know
what I mean? So sometimes too much data, you know.
Well, the data, yeah, you're right. Yeah. It's all about speed. It's not about your power file, you know? Like, well, if I can bring out that story, like the very first workout we did that one side of Ingram and I was beside you. And I did 100 watts less because at the time you had no idea how to hold your head, and you were really, your head was up in the air like Lionel Sanders, and it did prove, like, you know. And then all you started doing is ducking your head, and you went to get a fitting just over a track, and you still ended up with a wave. I mean, the next time we went out together, like, I mean, I think on the way out I kept with you, but then you dropped me on the way back, you know, like by a good margin too. So
I think the stuff that Jeremy did for me, I think that helped a lot, actually. So
wait till you get aero testing. I mean, so that's the kind of stuff that if you go to an actual aero testing clinic where they've got the equipment, it's like they're gonna have you adjust your thing up like 1 inch because, you know, it'll give you this much less CD and all. It's amazing, and suddenly you'll have the same effort and go 2 kilometers an hour faster for exactly what you were doing last week.
That would be fantastic.
It's
fantastic. So you've done that.
That's the best thing I've ever done.
Did you, right after that, did they change your position so much that it felt a little bit foreign? Like, you had to kind of get used to it.
Yeah, for sure.
That's what I hear about bike fitting all the time.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I remember I spent many years with Dave, who was kind of my aero coach too. And he was like, he was so strong that I'd be going, like, all out, and he'd ride beside me and talk to me. He'd be like, okay, so try and make your back flutter. Okay, so try and get your, you know, like, he'd be like, I'm just like, my eyeballs are popping out. And, but you know, so I already had some aero coaching, so to speak, before going to the clinic. So the clinic, it's called Stack Performance, by the way, STAC, and it's a guy out in Edmonton, and he does like 3D imaging and stuff. It's pretty neat. You don't need an aero tunnel. And it's not that expensive. It was like a few hundred bucks.
Yep.
The best few hundred bucks you'll ever spend if you're serious about
cool.
it. But yeah, he'll tell you, move your, you know, he works with UCI rules if that's what you want. If you're a triathlete, you don't have UCI rules, you can have the funkiest position in the world, right? Anybody who wants to compete UCI, you need these, you know. So he'll work with those rules for you and, you know, this helmet, this position, and you can keep going back and he'll say, what do you want to work on this time? And he'll say, well, why don't we do three different helmets and see which is best? And those are the kind of things he can do for you. So that's why I'm going back again, because I did positioning last time.
Okay.
Now he's going to work on, you know, ski suits, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? So.
And have you, talking to Orin and Jamie, they seem like they've kept a lot of their bikes. If you've been time trialing for 20 years, you keep all your old bikes or?
Yeah, I only bought my first time trial bike because I was just using a road bike with aero bars clipped on a few years ago. But I've had the same time trial bike for about, I mean, I've been riding for 30 years,
sure.
racing road bikes
yeah.
and even mountain bikes before then. But time trialing, I've been only really involved with them for about 7 or 8 years now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
I've been road racing and
yeah.
stuff, but time trialing was a fit my, you know, I was a mid-pack roadie at best. A really bad mountain biker. Yeah, I mean, you know,
yeah.
there's a lot of trees out there that have been injured by my shoulder. I turned out, time trial, there's no bumps. It's like a mountain bike race, except there's nothing in your way.
Yeah.
So I took to it. You know,
yeah.
Just seemed to work with my lack of skills.
Yeah. So. And let's say Joe had no equipment, what would be the best, or anyone who's new to time trial, what would be the best piece of equipment that they could buy? Do you think?
Well, time trial bike.
Time trial bike. Besides the time trial bike.
Yeah. Once you get that.
Yeah. What's your best piece of equipment after that?
I'd say the two things would be helmet and skin suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably helmet first. But really, skin suits are pretty important. Like,
yeah.
they're, like, they've done all kinds of tests and one little, you know, I mean, jersey and shorts. I mean, you've got all those folds where the jersey hits, you know. I mean, it's insane how many watts you lose on that.
I never want to buy a skin suit though, because I'm always planning on losing 50 pounds.
Yeah, I mean,
can you buy like an inexpensive one?
Or one that like beefs up your upper body and makes your waist look.
Actually, you know what? I think it's Rafa. Actually, Rafa, if you lose weight through cycling, or you
sure.
say it's through cycling or whatever, and no longer fit your clothes or whatever, you can write them and they give you a 40 or 50% off or something,
really?
Something like that. Yeah,
oh,
yeah
that's
cool.
There you go.
But I don't think they'll have cheap skin suits.
No.
That's the, you kind of mentioned the name. I did a mountain bike race out at Dufferin Forest, I think it was. It was called the Sausage Suit Time Trial.
Yeah, yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah.
So, that was a great name.
Sweet. Yeah, there is that early season where you've really not paid a lot of attention to your diet. And then you kind of come in and you're not completely dialed yet. And you do have that, you know, you pull your skin suit on and you see the, you know, the bump. And you're like, oh man, I hope nobody notices how fat, you know. Like,
I'm the opposite. I start the beginning of the season, trim. That's the best I'll be all year. And then by the end of the season, I'm...
Okay.
Yeah, as soon as summer hits, then, you know, I relax the diet a little bit, add some beer in there. And,
yeah.
You know, any events or anything that you were focused on are come and gone. So.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Like,
once you've done your big events, like
But yeah, the last 2 years in like April or May, I was my trimmest I was all year.
Yeah, you look really fit this spring.
Yeah, there you go.
You
see,
came out
there
like,
now. Bit of a difference.
So I know we kind of got away from it, but the training plan for the winter. So talk to some people. They do skiing. They do running. They do other things. Keith, are you a Zwift guy? Or?
No, I just train a road.
Just train
a road. I do Zwift once a week to do, you know, one ride just to break the monotony. But no, I follow their program. I mean, I used to use, you know, for years. By the way, I should mention, we talked about Ed Veal and whatnot. So Ed was my coach for 2.5 years. And he was a huge influence to me. He was the one that actually really kind of got me started on serious time trialing, like go get a real time trial bike rather than the road bike with bars on it sort of thing. And you know, he taught me to suffer. He taught me the idea of pain management. He used to talk about it. He used to say, this is all about pain management. You know, it's not about training, it's about pain management. And learn to suffer and like learn to just work with that pain. And so, you know, I'm going to do the trainer because it will keep me on that one. You know, I'll do some gym work and core and whatever, you know, but I mean, the focus is get fast for the July National Time Trial Championships.
Right.
So why would I go skiing?
Yeah.
That's just, you know, that's my way. Okay.
And some people aren't. They're interested in being outside. The
They want to be healthy. Just
flying in the
middle. I want to be healthy. I want to be fast.
No, that's good. And so do you, in the little bit of Zwift racing you do, do you hop into a race? Or just...
Later in the season, I would.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You do the crits, or what do you do?
Yeah, the crits.
Yeah. Yeah.
But not often. I'm talking like just for something to do.
Yeah.
I don't really want to... That gets you off the plan. You know, it's just, it breaks the monotony, but I don't think you ought to do that too much because it's not a structured training program. Has, you know, base build and specialty and then peak, right? So it's kind of four elements.
Yeah.
And if you're suddenly in the middle of base and you're doing a race, well, that's kind of not much of a base workout. That's kind of a, you know,
sure.
It's okay for fun and you do it maybe once every month or two, but you shouldn't really put a lot of that in there.
Yeah.
So I don't, but I love like structure. It's just the way I am at work. It's the way I am in my personal life. Ask my wife. It's like everything is like, this is what time I'm walking the dog. This is, you know, so it just works with the way I think. But
other people are more
positive. When we start training together next year, I'm going to have to hide some workouts. I don't want you seeing them. Joe, what are you doing? Joe, why are you doing that? We're doing this tomorrow.
What about you, Joe, for your winner?
I plan on putting a big winner in on Zwift. I'm going to do it. Mind you, I'm going to do other stuff, too. I mean, I bought cross-country skis 2 years ago, took some lessons, just kind of was just getting my feet wet, and then the weather changed, and then I never went back out. Last year, I didn't get on them, so it's something I want to try this year if I can find the time. And I bought some downhill skis. I used to downhill ski a lot when I was younger, and I want to get my son into that, so... That's something I'll be doing, but just for fun stuff, really. Not too much fitness, I don't think, for that. But but no, Zwift and trainer road. Yeah. I'm going to take a look at the program. And
see what, I think. What kind of cross-country skis? Are you skate guy or are you classic?
Skate. Yeah.
It's hard.
Oh, it's impossible right now. I got going last year, and I think the first time I fell like 14 times. And... you know what? I was actually, but I was working out at the gym at the time and I was doing lots of core exercises. And I think that's the reason that I could get up and keep going every time. Yeah. I am not working out at the gym right now. I'm not doing core exercises. So I think one of those falls and one of those splits and face plants and I'm done.
Your break.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I don't know. I'll take a couple lessons again and try to go. I know lots of people that do skate ski now. So I don't know how many of them will put up with my speed. But
it's physically demanding, though.
It isn't for the people that know what they're doing. It's like mountain biking, you know. You see people in the bush, and I can't believe that these guys, I can't believe how talented they are, how fast they can go.
Yeah.
And just seamlessly, like the fast and flowy, I think they call it. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
I bought some skis from Jen Jackson, and then we just happened to be at, it's Horseshoe or something, doing skate skiing. And I watched her and I thought, oh my God, this is like, we're not even doing the same sport.
Oh, I know. Mm-hmm. That's the last person I'd want to go skiing with.
Yeah.
Oh my God, she'd just kill you.
She's like,
I've seen her
finals. What are you doing? I don't know. I'm just trying to stay up.
Yeah.
A lot of technique. It's very technical skiing. It's like swimming. Swimming is great. You do swimming because of your tri stuff, right? Or what you're trying to do and try.
Trying to try.
But I mean, it's very technical swimming. It's not like riding is just like push hard on pedals, you know, go forward.
So what's the goals for next year for you fellas?
I don't know. Like that, I'm gonna do that time trial. Hopefully that if they have it over in Quebec with Keith,
mm-hmm.
and there's a Grand Fondo that weekend too. But it's like I just looked at it the other day. It's like 120K with about 2,200 or 2,300 meters in climbing. So I might do that for fun.
If it's fun.
Yeah, if it's fun. If I get a flat, I'll turn around and go back. You know what I mean? It won't, bother me whatsoever. So I'll be going over there just for the time trial and for a weekend away or whatever. Yeah. It'll be fun. Actually, yeah. Greg Innes is talking about wanting to come too. So maybe we rent a house or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
nice.
Yeah, so that I don't know if that's gonna happen. It's the spring racing. I don't know. It's hard to tell right now, but hard to believe that it's gonna be happening. Like Paris Dancaster would be one goal. I'd like to go back to that, and then I was gonna try some O Cup racing as well.
Oh.
This is a little known fact. I don't know if you know this, but I didn't find it from Jamie. You are the PDA. Clydesdale,
yes.
Oh, you really?
Yeah.
Oh, good for you, man.
See, he hides these things from us.
He's too modest.
Wow. That's fantastic, man.
So this year,
yes,
I wouldn't have been able to ride the Clydesdale category.
Oh, congratulations.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
Congratulations.
Well, actually, they say you can be fully clothed, and I definitely don't weigh myself fully clothed. So. Not that anybody wants to picture that, but I'm just trying to be as light as possible. Sorry.
Fair enough.
Anyways,
no, that's good.
But yeah, so it's a 220-pound and up is the weight class for that. So I did get underneath that this spring or whatever.
Yeah,
but I think
really
if you put some shoes on and a couple bottles of water in me right before, who knows? But then again, too, you're pretty dehydrated after a 2-hour pounding.
So what are you weighing right now?
Oh, I have no idea. I wouldn't even step on a scale right now.
But it's funny when you diet down to 220. Like, that's when you know where you're doing.
So who knows? I don't know if I'll be able to... Hopefully, I won't be able to compete for that title again. But if I do, then I'll have some fun doing it.
And what did you think of that race? I've never done it.
It was good. It was... I'm just trying to think. It's kind of... No, I guess I went in the... I was going to say it's my first race, but I went in the Centurion the year before. Yeah, it was pretty wild. So, I mean, the start's crazy. You just, try to race to get up for position because, I think a couple kilometers into the ride, you're on the rail trail.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I'd watched videos and stuff on it before, so I didn't really believe it, but, I mean, the videos are the videos. They're there, right? And they've got the guy's power, speed, and everything on the screen. And, I mean, you're flying through that rail trail at 35, 40 kilometers an hour with, it's just crazy. I think it's crazy the speed you're going through there with hundreds of people and three wide. Sometimes people are still trying to move up and move around people this in time. I can't believe there's not more accidents or whatever, but that was pretty wild. Overall, riding the gravel roads was new to me, but it didn't require any bike handling skills different.
Did you use a gravel bike?
Yeah, use a gravel bike. Okay. And I think there's 35 tires on it.
Okay.
I just bought the bike, so it was all new to me. But the farmer's fields weren't too bad. Some of the muddy areas, I didn't know what to do. I'm just trying to think.
The mud chutes?
Oh, the mud chute. I wiped out three times. Handlebars, over the handlebars twice. And cut my leg open pretty good on the one or whatever, but I was full of adrenaline, so I didn't even feel it. And, I looked down afterwards and I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was, I just get sliding. I don't know what to do. And then there's a route. It's wet. And it's like, okay, I know what's going to happen. Something bad's going to happen here. And sure enough. And even the rider beside me, I hit so hard. She's like, oh my God, are you okay? Like she stopped.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm fine. I'm fine. So anyways, we got going. But it was a fun race. Yeah, I got dropped from my group a couple times on the mud. there's mud patches in the farmer's fields. And I remember there was this one guy that I rode with for, I don't know, probably 30-40% of the race. And he was really strong, and I had pretty good legs that day. And we managed to catch our group again or whatever. And it was really cool because you should have seen the look on their faces. There was 16 of them, and they're like, where did you guys come from? They're looking at us weird, did you guys cheat or
what? Yeah, yeah.
Anyways,
we had those buttons you push on the bike that do pedal assist or whatever.
But anyways, it was good until we get to the final hill or whatever. And
how was that for you?
Oh, it was tough.
I've heard this legend, so.
Yeah, I mean, any hill is tough for me, but I guess inexperienced too. I'm going up the hill and I'm starting to struggle. My cadence is going down, so I stand up. Can't really stand up when you're riding on dirt and gravel, this and that. Back wheel slipped. I put my foot down, and now I'm walking.
Right.
Right? And you're not getting... The part of the hill that I was on, I wasn't getting going again. But then you get up there, and then now you can see the crowd, and now they can see me walking. I'm like, oh, no. So I did my best. I got back on the bike, and I rode to the finish. So
shit.
Found a little break. But, yeah, no, it was fun.
I feel you got to talk to Jamie. He's got pro tips. He walked part of that hill, and he's like, just before I can hear the crowd, hop back on. Well, so it looks
like I went down to the race with actually Jamie and Orna. So I had all of them throwing everything at me to going down or whatever. But yeah, anyways, we'll see. Next time. It's not that technical. It's not really a technical race. It's actually a decent race for me. But if I could do this.
And what corral did you get in?
I went in the VIP.
Nice.
But I finished just in enough to get in the elite category next time.
Oh,
so
nice.
You get to start, couple hundred places ahead, a little bit more ahead. So
yeah,
I was excited about that.
From what those guys were saying,
barely. I'm like two away.
Oh,
I made it by two people. Yeah,
good for you.
Yeah,
I heard from those other guys that's critical for that race is getting the
it's big out. So like and I listened to it, and Jamie's like they're the ones that talked me into the VIP for the two reasons. One, the logistics of it, because you get the help with the moving the bikes and your stuff and all that, but two, your starting position. So you actually start the same time as the elite riders, and there's 150 to 200 elite riders. So you start at the same time, but you're behind them. So they're in a different corral in front of you.
Okay.
And like I said, like you've only got, I don't know, maybe it's 2 kilometers. I don't even know. Like it's somewhere between like 2 and 3 kilometers till you get to the rail trail. So you don't have much time to fight for position. So, and we started, we got into the VIP corral and we're like 150 back, or you know what I mean? We're halfway or three quarters of the way back. So you got to get past those people.
Like a mountain bike race.
And then and the VIP riders, they're not all elite riders. You know what I mean? So they're all over the place, right? They're not all going. There's first timers. Like I was a first timer and I'm in there. You know what I mean? So.
But it sounds like a mountain bike race. That's the way they'll start. It's like bolt for the single track.
Full
out, you know?
I guess so, yeah.
Yeah. Cyclocross too. They do that. You know, you race to the tape, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. And then I don't know how the other waves do it. Like even being in wave one, so for one, you're not going to have as strong a packs, like, you know, because if you're racing in a group or whatever, obviously the elite riders are, I'm sure there's the odd rider in there that could be stronger that maybe wasn't in the race before or the year before. But then you get lined up at all these mud chutes or all these single track spots and you just got to wait. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know how those... If I couldn't be in the VIP or the elite, I wouldn't see the point of racing it. If you want to go out and ride it for fun or whatever, but like
that's what people do.
Maybe wave one's not too bad, but wave two, three, or four, or five, forget about it. Like there's got to be lineups.
Yeah, it seems like just a massive herd of people.
Yeah, so I don't know. There's 1,500 people or something the last time. Crazy.
And you mentioned the triathlon, or is there any rumblings of some triathlons next year?
Yeah, it was a goal of mine for this year. I was hoping to do Ironman Florida. It's just always been a thing I always wanted to do, is do an Ironman.
Okay.
And so I got a lot of work to do on my running and some work to do on my swimming, but a lot of work to do on my swimming, I guess. But
where in Florida is it?
I'm not sure. Oh.
Florida's a big state.
Yeah, I know. It's Panama City Beach.
Oh, like way down south.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I mean that was the thing. I'm having some perennial issues with my foot or whatever when I'm running right now. So I don't know what's going to happen there. And then obviously with travel and with everything, I don't know. Then I thought maybe I'll do Ironman Canada next year, and it's sold out. So I think the triathlon training is going to be on the back burner for right now.
Keep your eyes open, man. People sell off their Ironman.
I heard about that. They never used to be able to, but now they can, I guess.
Yeah.
So. What if I could get in, I'd probably do it. But I wouldn't do Florida next year, I don't think. So I don't think traveling's going to be...
Paramount?
Yeah. So I don't know. The first thing is going to be to try to run a marathon. So I mean, we'll see. We'll see how that goes. I'm going to start working on that though.
So are you going to run? Sorry, just not to hold off on you, Keith. But, are you going to do running outside this winter, or are you going to be on a treadmill, or what's
I'll be outside.
Outside?
Okay. Yeah. So you got shoes with little spiky things, or what?
You know what? Actually, I bought a pair of Salomon Speedcross or whatever. I had a pair a couple of years ago, and I went for a run one time on ice, and I was fine. I didn't need the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I did actually buy those spikes the one time to try them out or whatever, but I'm fine with the other one. So I got a fresh pair of those, and
Robert, did you get the Gore-Tex?
Yes.
Oh, boy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any other ones, but I got on this one, Janice.
There's a flaw with those shoes.
Oh, yeah?
There's one hole at the top where your foot goes in. Yeah, the water still makes
the Oh, really? I don't know.
I went running one time with them, and I thought, oh, yeah, they're Gore-Tex. It'd be great. Yeah, it's great until the water's over your shoe. And it's just pouring inside, then, it's over.
Well, I don't think I'll be running through conditions like that. So.
No, that's what you use the treadmill.
This is a secondary
thing. That's a bike day.
And what about you, Keith? What do you got on for races next year?
Well, the big race is the TT in Quebec. But it's definitely the Newmarket Eagles will have their series. I'm hoping that, I was actually going to run the Barry series this year. So I'm hoping actually to run it. I'm planning on doing, I don't know if you ever read what I was planning on doing, but myself and Jeremy over at Track, we were talking about him earlier. He and I agreed that we would kind of join efforts and sponsor four races.
Yep.
And, people's collective time would be, in different categories, so different ages and sexes, and then we would get prizes. And, we were going to make it something special rather than just show up and whatever. Just four races. So, I'm hoping I can do that, run that, like at least.
The handicap system too, right?
The handicap system. Yeah.
I think that's great. That's what's going to get people out.
Yeah, dialed in handicap system.
I was really excited when I saw you put that out.
Yeah, I thought that was great. I couldn't wait for it.
Yeah,
and COVID happened. But based on what I've seen with Newmarket, we could probably do that. So I'm thinking I might do that again. Now, again, there's things I have to work out with Jeremy and see if he still wants to do that and all that. But let's assume. So that might be one option. For sure, Newmarket's going to be holding their time trials. I know the Quebec one sounds like it's going to happen. And I am under the impression that there may be other, events with time trials. So the very least, we'll have the Newmarket, probably the Barrie ones, and, hopefully the Quebec one. So that's all I'm going to... If they do inter-club road racing, that's fine. I'll do that.
Yeah.
They're always fun. You've done those before.
Yeah,
right?
Really enjoyed the inter-club.
They're fun. They're like
those are awesome.
They're 60 kilometers. So even a guy like me, who hates going more than 20 minutes.
They're awesome for intro people, too. As we were talking about, $5.
Yeah.
Just come pick a group that you know is kind of roughly...
Great training.
People that you're with and... it's
great training.
Day.
They're actually great training for time trialing.
Yeah.
Because they're like a team time trial,
Exactly.
So, those things are fine. If they run those again, that'd be great. But if they don't, I think just there's going to be a lot of the club level time trials open to people using their new format, which is fastest guy leaves first.
Right. And I'm wondering if, because the province has sent out a few surveys, like the OCA has sent out some stuff, sort of asking what racing looks like for you next year with your discipline and... I kind of feel like they're hinting around probably like a road time trial provincial championships because I don't think there was one 2019. I think it was 2018 was the one I did. So I think, because we talked about it, it makes the most sense to do that because everyone's
spinning. Yeah, I was going to say you might see more stuff happen this year. If they're not going to be able to do anything else, there might be more time trials.
That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if they have some really good, attractive time trial events... Yeah. I'll go. I don't care. If I got to stay overnight somewhere, I'll go.
Yeah.
I'll just, I'm itching.
You're not alone. There's a lot of people that are itching to put on that race plate again.
Yeah, I think this fast, give me a lot of fast people next year. Like, we may have very stiff competition next year.
Yeah.
So
it's good. I did some events.
Yeah, time trial. Everybody's a time trialist now. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, we all rode by ourselves.
Well, it's called Strava. Yeah. KOMs or whatever.
No, I just mean through COVID, right? Yeah. Riding by yourself, right? Everybody became a...
Yeah,
time trialist this spring.
Yeah. You're both on Strava, I know that. you've got KOMs.
Yeah.
You have KOMs, I know. Is there one that you cherish the most? Is there one that if someone went and you got that email, someone sniped your...
That just happened to me.
Did it?
I had two taken away from me on Friday.
Really?
You know that nice Friday we just had?
Yes.
And I took the day off and went for a walk with my wife.
Uh-huh.
And literally one guy took two of mine in a row. And I was like, they're flat time trial. They're flat. You know, I didn't do it on my TT bike, but they're flat courses. They're what I do best. And the guy took them from me. I'm like, yeah. So, I mean, now, like, I'm just beside myself. I mean, I can't wait to go back out and take them from him. I will bury myself to do it. I will, like, you know, do whatever it takes, even if I have a heart attack in the last 3 seconds crossing the line. I want those back. So,
So, I know I hate to use the word fair weather. If it's cool,
I don't mind the cool.
So, this year you're going to try and take a stab back at
it? No, I'm going to wait till next summer.
Next summer.
I won't even do it in the spring.
Okay.
I'm not doing it till it's warm. I'm either in Florida or I'm on my trainer or it's July.
You're awesome, Keith. You're awesome. Joe, what do you got?
I just got it this.
I know the answer maybe.
August 12th. There you go. Yep. Glen Huron to 124. It's a hill. So that's why it's my most favorite one.
Okay.
Do you have that one? You got it?
I got it. It was a huge tailwind, but I don't care. I'll take it. Oh. Anyways, it's still a climb. And I think I tied the K1, but anyways, it's good enough for me. But that'd be my most proud of one. It's out the escarpment way. So it's somewhat heavily ridden. It's not, I don't think it's been raced up. But anyways, there's a lot of good strong hill climbers out there, so that's my pick.
That's the one. Which one?
And John Maloney, if you're listening, don't go out there and take it, buddy. Yeah. Please. I mean, he could probably go out and do that at like 120 beat heart rate or something.
Yeah. One leg on the pedal.
But is there one that you're like, I'll defend that no matter what? Like Keith is gonna go back.
These are up in the Crosslands area, these two. I've got a bunch of them. Yeah. I've got about a dozen KOMs, but these two, it really bugged me that I lost them because they're my world. They're flat.
Right.
Nobody beats me in the flat stuff.
I had some stuff on ridge. And, one was ridge line 3 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
I liked it because it was a double line,
not
just a single. And Trevor and John took that for me this year. So... full disclosure, I actually caught a car this year and tried to take it back on the back of the car. And I didn't really catch the car. The car caught us. It was Mike Drinkwater, and he passed us when we were riding. He's like, come on, guys. And he waved us on, so we got on him. But anyways, it was a little after the line 3 started, so I didn't get it, but I would have taken it back and been happy taking it back that way.
Uh-huh.
But I would have told them.
Yeah.
They could flag me if they want. But I don't know. Yeah, I got a couple on ridge, the lines. I like those, and if I lose them, I really want to.
You're going to defend some territory.
There's probably a lot of competition on those.
Well, I know.
Like it's
they're tough.
You got to be fast to do those.
Got
to
be fast. You got to have wind. I like going for them on my own. I don't want to get them in a group.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, you pretty much got to go for me on your own because you got to go like 50 or something to get them. You know what I mean?
And you got to have somebody cooperate with you and maybe they want to take it.
Yeah.
True enough.
But you have worked with people, talking with Steve Elliott, when you guys did your gate-to-gate-to-gate up at Algonquin.
Ah, yes. I forgot about that. Sorry. I love that one. Yeah.
That's the one
totally. Yeah, I can't believe it. Yeah, no, I love that one. Yeah.
Which one was that?
The Algonquin.
That's the one, the gate-to-gate-to-gate.
Oh, the fat bastard.
That's
the one. Yeah, that's the one I wanted. Yeah. Oh, that was awesome. Yeah, so we're going up to Algonquin. We're going for the segment, the whole out and back or whatever.
Yeah.
And feel bad taking it from our buddy Paul Robinson, who looked like he did most of it on his own. So that'll be another goal, is to go out and do that effort on my own to see if I can beat him that way.
Yeah.
But so I was scouting out the segments. Okay, there's other ones there, and there was one named Fat Bastard. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. This has got my name written all over it. I'm going to take this. So anyways, I tried to figure out where it was, right? And like, I don't know, I couldn't tell exactly how far it was from the end, but I knew it was close. So, and it was coming back. So when we were going out, I was just looking for something that we climbed that was about that distance or whatever. And but it was actually a direction where it turned. It went kind of north-south when most of the route is east-west. So that was kind of what helped me. But anyways, it was funny when we were coming back. I told everybody, I'm like, I'm going to leave the group. You know, you're welcome to come with me if you want, but I'm going for this. I got to get this KOM. And so then I take off and I'm just hammering and this and that. And then I loop around. They're like, wow, that was quick. I'm like, yeah, it's not here. It's next turn.
Oh, no.
So I caught on, had to catch my breath again. And it was really close to it. But, I mean, everything looks the same up there, right? And,
yeah.
Oh, man.
But anyways, I just killed it. I gave it everything I had. And then I eventually spun out. So then I got in. I super tucked and everything. And, I mean, I couldn't have done it any better, I don't think. And I beat the group by 6 seconds. That was it.
Nice. Wow. Hey, man.
So we were flying. It was a fast group. Like, we were flying.
Oh, yeah. Keith, so these are your bell out questions, guys. Keith, will start with you and then Joe. What's your 15-second power, roughly?
Mary, I don't know. I mean, who cares? I don't sprint.
Yeah, that's a good answer.
I don't sprint.
Joe?
13:27 or 13:28. I looked it up for you
before. All right. Yeah, that's right. How do you take your coffee?
Black, well, no, I put a little bit of almond milk in it, or espresso straight up.
Yep.
I never put anything. I just drink straight up. I don't make all those foamy things.
Yeah.
But with drip coffee, percolate coffee, I just do a little bit of almond milk and a little bit of stevia.
Nice. Sure.
Every morning I have a shot of espresso straight up, and then I have a red eye with one milk.
Okay. Raisins and cookies.
Yeah, good.
Totally.
Mm.
Pineapple on pizza?
Yeah, sure.
Depends on the mood.
Fruit and beer?
No.
What?
Beer and beer.
Fruit and beer?
No.
You know those fruit flavored. Okay.
Yeah.
It's just wrong.
Oh, maybe, I don't know, maybe a lime and a Corona or something on a hot summer day.
Yeah, I guess so. What's your favorite band?
Rush. I've been a fan since, I'm 58 and I was following them since 74. Six, I think. I went to the first Rush concert, which was 3 years after they did their first album.
Cool.
Yeah.
Be the hip.
The hip, okay, good.
The hip. Oh, yeah, okay.
Do you remember what the first piece of music you bought was and what format it was in? Like vinyl, cassette, whatever?
I'm old, right? So
that question's more for you than
me. I had the thick vinyl.
Yeah.
I don't remember my very first one, but I did buy some Beatles albums.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
back in the day.
Fair enough.
It was that thick stuff, you know.
Yeah.
It was definitely a cassette. It would have been, I'm trying to think, but it would have been some 80s rap.
Yeah?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. I loved 80s rap. Still love it.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, totally. Yeah.
Vanilla Ice.
No? Yeah.
That's awesome. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate it. And hopefully we spark some interest with some time trial, and hopefully we'll see some bodies out there next year.
And hopefully we'll have a BCC time trial.
Yeah.
If I can just do a plug on it, if I'm able to run this series, we will have a handicap system.
Yeah.
So that anybody can show up and still have a chance of winning. And the other thing we're going to do is give prizes. So, you know, a prize to women given certain ages, men, young and old, with handicaps. So anybody can show up. You don't have to have a time trial bike. You get a handicap for having a regular road bike.
There's going to be an Eddie Merckx division.
Eddie Merckx and
road bike division.
Prizes, like trophies, you know, trophies and t-shirts and all kinds of stuff. So
trophies are awesome. They're better than
trophies are great. You get to
trophies are better than prizes. They're bragging rights, right? You can take a picture and put it on social media.
And in that bag, I have a trophy from Orin, 1982, from BMX. He was such a
I heard him talking about that. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah. That was the one bike he wished he didn't sell or whatever.
Right,
that's so funny. I could picture him on that BMX bike right now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Funny. Well, Coach Ed Veal used to say, you know, you'll give your heart for a $5 medal.
Exactly.
It's true.
Yeah.
Stupid medal.
Yeah.
Can't be a matter. It matters to you.
Absolutely.
You
know? So, all right. Well, thanks, boys. And we'll do this again sometime soon.
Okay.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
I really want to thank Joe Fortnum and Keith Richards. If you don't follow them on Strava, I highly recommend it. Super motivating what those guys, what their suffer level is and how smart they are about their training. Very dialed in, students of the game. They very focused on time trialing and just cycling in general. If you haven't given them a follow on Strava, I highly recommend that. However you found us, I'm super grateful that you did. Exciting news coming for the podcast with a few new partnerships. We are All Wheels Pod on the social media. You can find us on Spotify and on iTunes. However you found us, grateful that you did, and we'll talk soon, folks. Thanks.